This is Booktown. You're new here, aren't you? Maybe I should show you around. You can get anything you want here. Anything you want. Anything you desire. Anything you can imagine. It's all here. It's all free. It's all for you. Come on. I'll show you around. If you've got the guts. This is Booktown. You can get anything you want here. Anything you need. This is Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I'm going to be with you till 2 p.m. And we've had a sudden change of plans. I was going to interview an author in the first half of the program. I called him a little earlier today and left a message on his machine. And I just called him now and only got his message machine. So he may, I've asked him to call back, and he may do that. I hope he can. His name is Carl Zimmer, and he's the author of a fascinating book called Microcosm about the bacteria E. coli. It's called Microcosm, E. coli, and the New Science of Life. And if he does call, we will interrupt what we're doing. Aha, that may be him. Just a minute. I think that was him, and we don't know. I'm going to try it again. Let's hope he calls back in just a minute. But if he doesn't, in the second half of the program, we have the poets who are going to be part of the Nevada County Poetry Series fundraiser, annual July fundraiser, which normally is cowboy poets. And there are no cowboys among the people who are sitting opposite me, as far as I can tell. And I'm going to ask Bill Gaynor, once we can get everything arranged, why exactly that is the case. What happened to the cowboys?
Oh, you know, the cowboys. We were doing cowboys for, I don't know, 7, 8 years, and then we were doing them in conjunction with the fair, because, you know, Nevada County and the fair, that's the focus.
Yeah. Now, you keep talking, and I'm going to answer the phone.
I will. And then what happened was, is a lot of the guys we had worked with early on, for very reasonable, we got to be fairly well known and very pricey, so we couldn't use those guys anymore because we couldn't afford them. And then also the community kind of got saturated with cowboys. Not that we were the first one to do it. You know, the rodeo down in Penn Valley always did cowboys, poets, and but it got to the point that we had a diminishing return. So we decided to move on to something else. We decided to go move our fundraiser from January to October to August. We might have another one in October, too. It all depends how well this one goes. So what we did is we rounded up. See, how's that for a pun? We rounded up three very dynamic young women here from the area. Actually, two from the area, one down south of Sacramento from where?
Not south of Sacramento, not Rescue.
Oh, Rescue. Rescue, okay. So anyway, so we're all kind of local folks here. We have Julie Boleyn, Sean Aveningo. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
That's Sean Aveningo.
Aveningo. And Marilyn Souza.
Souza.
See, I blew that again. I've known her for quite a while, and I blow her name every time.
Okay, and now that I've gotten Bill, just to tease you all, the call did come through.
Oh.
So we're going to continue with the interview I had planned for the first half. I'm going to rudely cut you guys off.
Okay.
And we will come back in about 20 minutes. And guys who are listening, I think you have a treat ahead of you. In the meantime, I have with me on the phone Carl Zimmer, the author of Microcosm, E. coli, and the New Science of Life, which has just come out in paperback from Vintage Books. Welcome to Booktown, Carl.
Hi, thanks for having me.
E. coli is one of those organisms that we mostly hear about when there are disasters, when somehow some E. coli is discovered on a plant, as it was spinach a year or two ago in California. But it's actually part of us all the time. It lives in us. How does it become so benign and then so threatening?
Well, we just don't hear about the nice E. coli, the E. coli that we all carry around with us, inside of us. And each of us carries about a billion or so harmless E. coli. In fact, they probably do some good things for us and help keep us healthy. And on top of that, E. coli are very easy to take care of if you're in a laboratory and want to just keep them in a petri dish. And so as a result, it's become the most scientifically studied species on Earth.
Now, it's a bacterium that inhabits the intestinal system of warm-blooded animals, so I assume it did not exist before warm-blooded animals came about, which I couldn't tell you whether that was 100 million years ago or was quite some time ago, but certainly not with the beginning of life.
Oh, no. E. coli is a pretty youthful species as species go. And, you know, we like to think of bacteria as being primordial and being just totally unchanged since life began. But E. coli is actually very carefully adapted to living in animals like us. And it's got all sorts of genes that it uses to sense our inner environment and to take up lots of molecules that we make as we eat food and to basically live a very good life inside of a mammal.
And there are many strains, and the strains that do best inside us are the ones that are particularly adapted to our systems.
Yeah, I mean, the scientists are still finding more and more new strains of E. coli, as with any bacteria. I mean, the diversity of bacteria is really staggering when you start to take a look at it on the genetic level. Now, a few of these strains of E. coli do make people sick, and some of them make people really sick. But for the most part, they just keep finding more and more strains of harmless E. coli. So it just speaks to the incredible diversity of life that's actually living inside of us. I mean, E. coli is only one of many species of microbes that live inside of our bodies. It's been estimated that maybe there are 5,000 different species of microbes living inside of our intestines.
And they don't actually get there prenatally. I hear they arrive about a day or two after birth, and yet everybody has them.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. Essentially what's happening when you're born is that you're like, it's as if you were like a new island made in the middle of the ocean, like a volcano forming. And you know, when that happens with real islands, you know, they're bare, and then a certain series of plants and animals start to settle in there, and they follow some ecological rules for creating a whole ecosystem on an island. Well, we follow our own rules, and our sort of internal ecosystem grows up as we grow up, and we all end up with a lot of the same species. And scientists don't really understand how it is that we so reliably end up with such a similar ecosystem of life inside of each of us.
It lives in each of us, but as you said a little while ago, its main notoriety, aside from occasionally escaping into spinach and the like, is that it's the most studied organism on the planet. So it lives very well in test tubes and other places as well.
Yeah, the E. coli has probably won scientists maybe a dozen or more Nobel Prizes. They started studying it in the 1930s, but really just by accident. There were some biologists who were wanting to really get at the core of what it means to be alive. You know, they really want to know, what is life? This is before anybody knew how DNA worked and so on. And so they thought, well, we could study some really complicated animal or plant to try to get at this, or we could study something really simple. And so they tried to find something that was very simple and also very easy to raise. And it just sort of so happened that E. coli was sitting around in some collection of in a microbiology department, and people said, "Yeah, this works pretty well. Let's use this." And they started making really important discoveries, like what genes are made of and so on. And so people kept using E. coli because they were understanding it better and better and better. And so rather than reinvent the wheel, people would go back to E. coli to ask even deeper questions about life. And so today, if you go into a molecular biology lab, chances are you'll probably see scientists still today working with flasks of E. coli, except now they're doing a whole new set of experiments on them and actually probing even deeper into what it means to be alive.
I've heard one of those Nobel Prize winners, Jacques Monod, quoted as saying something to the effect of everything that is true of E. coli is true of an elephant. But yeah, certainly not true the other way around.
what he meant by that was this incredible realization that scientists had that life is incredibly uniform. And they made that discovery by studying E. coli and discovering things about E. coli and then looking at other forms of life to see if they follow the same rules. So, for example, E. coli carries its genes in DNA. Well, so does an elephant. And E. coli uses its genes to make proteins in a certain way. Well, so does the elephant. In fact, there's a code for turning genes into proteins, and E. coli and the elephant and us and all other living things use basically the same genetic code. So that means that E. coli and the elephant and us and redwood trees and all other living things share a common ancestry. We inherited all of these things from an ancestor that we all descend from. So it's a wonderful discovery that was really started with E. coli.
And E. coli and the other bacteria are prokaryotes. They don't have cells. They don't have nucleus. So that they really are as simple a form as you can get. It's basically the genetic material inside a wall, and what else is in there?
Well, it's funny that scientists started out with E. coli because they thought it was really simple. And yet it turns out to be surprisingly complicated. So, for example, E. coli has about 4,000 genes. And that's a lot of genes when you think about it. And it's actually incredibly dynamic inside a microbe like E. coli. New molecules are being made, old molecules are being destroyed, molecules are interacting with each other, signals are moving across the cell. It's taking in all sorts of information from its surroundings, and it's making decisions. It's making decisions about whether to make a toxin or to build a tail or to divide. It's doing all sorts of things at the same time, including growing and dividing. So E. coli's DNA, if you think of it as like letters, they have several million letters in their DNA, and they can reproduce their DNA as they're growing and dividing at an incredible speed, up to about several thousand letters per second, and they'll do it precisely. They'll make maybe one mistake every billion letters. So there's a lot going on in this, even in this little cell. So they've had a bit of a bum rap, several bum raps. People say, "Oh, E. coli, it's just what makes you sick." Or then they say, "Oh, E. coli, it's really simple." It's neither.
How rapidly do they divide? If you had one E. coli in a Petri dish, how long would it take till you had thousands or millions?
Well, at their very fastest, E. coli can divide once every 20 minutes. Now, if they kept up at that rate, you could start with a single E. coli, and in a couple days, you basically cover the entire planet with E. coli. And obviously, that doesn't happen because it takes a lot of energy and a lot of different nutrients for E. coli to grow as fast as possible. So what scientists will often do is they will take a single E. coli and use that to start a colony in, like, a flask with a lot of sugar and other nutrients. And, you know, by the next day, they'll have billions of E. coli from that original founder. So they go really fast, which is great when you're a scientist because, you know, you need them to grow in order to study them. So, for example, if you want to see what a particular gene does and you mutate it in E. coli, you can then have a billion new E. coli all with that mutation in the gene, and you can study them all and see what they're doing in different situations. So it's basically just a great scientific tool.
You say that their reproduction is dependent on the nutrients they get. What nutrients do they get from us?
So from us, they get things like glucose, but they can also eat the kinds of sugar in our bodies, like lactose and maltose. So they can eat all sorts of different kinds of sugar, and they're incredibly versatile. So they can break it down with the help of oxygen, if there's oxygen around, or they can totally switch the metabolism over to do it without oxygen. And that's what they're doing inside of us. But, of course, you know, they also have to survive outside of us because I won't get into the details, but you can imagine that if you're living in someone's intestines, you might end up outside of their intestines after a while. So E. coli is all over the environment, living in water or soil, all sorts of different places, and it can find food to eat there as well.
You mentioned in the book how complex they are, that they actually have something of a social life and that they actually can sacrifice individuals for the good of a group of the bacteria that is forming.
Yeah, this is a particularly big surprise, and it's been a surprise to scientists themselves because they would traditionally just think of bacteria as being just dumb little individual organisms just sitting somewhere feeding and growing and dividing. And that was the life of a microbe. That was all there was to know about E. coli in terms of what its life was like. That's actually not true. So as scientists start to study E. coli in more realistic settings, they discover that E. coli actually has a very complicated social life. So it makes molecules that it uses to communicate with other E. coli and with other species. And it can eavesdrop on other species as well. In fact, there are some species of E. coli that can even eavesdrop on us. So they can pick up the hormones that we produce in our intestines, and that's a clue to E. coli that it is in our intestines. So it knows where it is by listening to our own signals. So among E. coli, this language helps them to work together. And so some of the things that they might do might be to build a kind of microbe city, a sort of slimy mat called a biofilm. They have to switch hundreds of genes on and off in order to change over to building biofilms. And they have to do it together. And so they're sending signals to each other saying, okay, I think there are enough of us here that we can do this together. So it's a collaborative effort. And they will also collaborate to go to war, essentially, with other colonies of E. coli. So some individuals will produce toxins inside of themselves, and they will actually make so many toxins that they explode. Their toxins won't kill their own relatives because they all have the right antidote. But unrelated E. coli that are nearby die when they're exposed to the toxin. And so essentially these bacteria are making the ultimate sacrifice for their fellow E. coli.
They're suicide bombers.
Yeah, they are.
Another thing that fascinated me, you mentioned in the book, is that they sometimes have flagella, tails, and sometimes don't. And it takes so much energy and organization to produce a tale that it doesn't happen in the lifetime of just one individual.
Yeah, these are really wonderful little structures. They are actually made up of tens of thousands of individual molecules of proteins that assemble themselves on E. coli's surface, and they form this huge spiraling tail. And E. coli can spin it by using charged atoms, using the energy from charged atoms, which it pulls in and into itself and pushes out. And it has this kind of what looks like a wheel at the base of the tail that will spin around, being driven by that energy, and it'll go hundreds of times a second spinning around. And it takes a lot of energy and time to build these things. And in fact, as you say, actually, E. coli can grow and divide into two E. coli and not be done yet with building it. And so what begins in one generation doesn't end until several generations later. But there are situations where E. coli is just in a bad place and needs to grow a tail and just get out of there. So you know, once they figure out what things are like in their environment, they make the decision to build this thing.
And after they're out of the bad situation, do they keep the tail or does it drop off?
They'll lose their tail, yeah. If they are in a place that's very comfortable and there's sort of a reliable supply of food, they may just abandon their tails. And then if life gets bad again, they might build new tails again.
You mentioned that it's the most studied organism on the planet. What are scientists particularly looking for in E. coli these days?
Well, one thing they're trying to do is they're trying to figure out how genes work together. So you've got in E. coli, for example, 4,000 genes. We have 20,000 genes at least. And the fact is that genes do not work alone. They work in big networks. So genes need to cooperate with other genes. For example, proteins might come together in order to function. One gene may make a protein that switches another gene off so that it can't make its protein. It's very complicated, and you actually see drawings that look a bit like circuit diagrams because it's that complex. And scientists don't know how any living thing keeps that all together, what the entire network looks like and how it works. So I'd like to do E. coli because they already know so much about it.
You said about your book that one of the reasons you chose this topic was you wanted to investigate and explain to some degree what you learned about the nature of life itself. What have you learned?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, I've learned that there are a lot of different ways of defining life depending on what about life you're interested in. Actually, I discovered that there are hundreds of definitions of life that have been proposed, and most of which are fairly good definitions, except that they're not the last word on it. So I don't have a definition of life, but I do see in the work that the scientists do on E. coli, I do see what Manoj was saying about how what is true for E. coli is true for the elephant, and to a level that Manoj did not appreciate. So, for example, we were just talking about communication. I mean, the fact is that all living things communicate. E. coli may just be a bacterium, but it's got a very complicated way of communicating with other members of its species. And it's very social. So even something as simple as bacteria are social. So there might be some rules here that scientists can learn about, rules about how living things live with other living things, rules about the networks that of genes that make life possible. And by understanding them, the scientists may be able to get a better handle on what they might want to look for on other planets. So, you know, what is true for E. coli might be true for aliens.
They are much more complex than you expected, but they are still very simple life forms. At one point, I think bacteria were considered not actual living, but it's now clear that they are. Are they the simplest? Are viruses considered living or just opportunistic mechanisms?
Well, I think that viruses really force us to think about whether it's worth drawing a really sharp line between life and non-life. You know, I don't think it's actually like a switch. I mean, you know, it may be, you know, for us, you know, you're either alive or you're dead. But when it comes to different forms that life can take, you know, there might be kind of a continuum. So, I mean, viruses, for example, for the most part, they can't reproduce without taking over the genes of another host. They just can't do it on their own. But on the other hand, they do all sorts of other things that we consider quintessentially what life is about. You know, they do reproduce. So, you know, I would say they're kind of alive, and I think that's okay. And, you know, maybe when life began about 4 billion years ago, it may have gone through that kind of a transition. It may have been very difficult to say when exactly life began because basically just chemicals started having more and more lifelike properties. Maybe they began to grow and divide before they could evolve, or maybe vice versa. They could have just slowly taken on the qualities of life as we know it.
But once you get the E. coli, you're definitely there.
Oh, yeah. That's, when you've got E. coli, you've got full-blown life in all its glory.
Okay, thanks so much, Carl. This is Booktown on KVMR-FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Thoman. I've been talking with Carl Zimmer, whose book, Microcosm, E. coli and the New Science of Life, has just come out in paperback from Vintage Books. He's a veteran science writer. I could mention some other titles, but I think it's more important to let you know that he is, to the best of his knowledge, the only writer after whom a species of tapeworm has been named. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And this is Booktown on KVMR-FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Thome. I'll be here till 2. And I'm back with Bill Gaynor of the Nevada County Poetry Series and his three poets who were starting to talk when I got connected with Carl Zimmer. And apparently we've been getting text messages to the effect of, who wanted to hear about E. coli? We want the poets.
That's right. That's right.
Well, now you're back, so
now we're
maybe
here.
You should start all over again and tell us exactly what's happening. Well, normally you have cowboy poetry for your summer fundraiser, and where are the cowboys?
So true. Now, this summer, this year, we've kind of figured we ran that out as far as we could go. It's kind of a diminishing return for us, and other folks in the community are doing cowboys as well, so they're still available, they're still around in the community. We're just not doing them this year. We decided to try to up the ante a little bit here this summer, because, again, it's fair time. That's why we're doing before fair rather than after fair. So this year, we're kind of calling it the rent party. We're trying to raise some dough, which is always something that us in the arts are involved with, trying to raise dough. Not only for us, but, you know, we share some of the rent, the gate there with the center, so it would also benefit them. And they're in need of all the contributions they can get as well. So are we, the Nevada County Poetry Series. So we'd appreciate everybody coming out. And we have three dynamic young women here from the area. Actually, the farthest away, Sean Avenigno is
she'll say it herself.
She'll say it correctly. Is from Down in Rescue, but she works over in Folsom. But she drove all the way over here. This is dedication to poetry. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. You cut the poets off, boy, you get people upset.
Right.
You know.
Well, I had an introduction all planned for this entire program, saying that today we're going to deal with two organisms which are all around us, frequently unnoticed, but they come as warning signs of danger at certain particular crucial moments, and of course these are E. coli and poets.
So true. Well, the other
and we've got the E. coli out of the way, so.
Well, yeah, well, that's the, you know, the Julie says, well, how are you going to segue from that to that? I'll tell you, you know, poisoning, which is kind of what E. coli is about, that it is nothing for a fellow like me. And those of you that know me know that I've survived at least 4 poisoning attempts.
By poets?
No, I mentioned that to the wife, and she says no, 6. So there is an issue there. But anyway, no, I do want to introduce these young women here who, like I said, they spent broke away from their day today. In fact, 2 of them took off work, and 1 of them is supposed to be at her mother's birthday party, of all things, to give up the mother's birthday party to come over and spend some time with us. So why don't you jump in there, Eric, and ask them whatever you want.
Well, actually, I was saying, Julie, do you have to get to the party?
Yeah, but it's okay. It's worth it, you know.
Okay.
Poetry.
Hopefully your mom understands.
Your mom understands.
To break her mother's heart, so it's worth it.
Okay. Well, why don't you go first, since you may have to leave soonest,
and
we could let you out, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
And Jules, do pronounce your name correctly, your last name, please.
It's Avani. No. it's Valin, Julie Valin.
Yeah,
Valin.
It looks, many people would say Valin.
Yeah,
said, but
well,
it's
we
Valin.
Get that all the time. I'm used to it.
You think you're used to it.
And I've been with the Nevada County Poetry Series on the board for about 6 or 7 years. But besides that, I'm also a poet. And I've been writing since I was about 14. And I absolutely love everything about it. And I love everything that we try to do with the Nevada County Poetry Series for our community. Because without it, it would be a very boring place to live.
And she is also involved with 6 Foot Swells.
Right, the publishing company.
Yes, we have a small poetry press, and we publish poetry chapbooks, and I think we have 5, maybe possibly 6.
Possibly 6.
Poetry chapbooks.
And Bill is one of the people you publish.
Yes, we have.
This gets a bit incestuous.
I was in the Valentine.
You were in the Lost Valentines.
And then I was also in the anthology they did.
The Cocktails and Confessions.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun with that, by the way.
That was a wonderful.
You can see sections of that on YouTube if you choose to go. Just go look for BillGaynor.com and have an enjoyable time.
And that was the reading that we did. We had a blast, but I was pregnant, so I drank.
No cocktails for you.
No cocktails for me. Very hard time.
Well, do you have a poem for us, Jules?
Yes, I do.
Jump in.
I have a poem. This is an older poem, but who's counting? It's called David's Cello Gig in the Church. I sat up in the balcony where the notes soared and ascended beyond the window above him, a triangular frame for the pine tops, up and even farther up beyond all of this. Everything was filled with his music. Even the little boy sat quietly in the pew, unstirring during 4 Brahms preludes. I couldn't help but compile grocery lists, detergent, toilet paper, butter. Passion like that and success with releasing it in a sensory form mystifies me almost to boredom. But I felt guilty about the grocery list thing, so I listened closely until each note became an arm, a marble statue, a cluster of stars. Thought his body movements mimicked caressing a woman from behind, the quiet fervor on his face something enviable. Then I looked around at the people, wondered what music like this causes in their hearts. Why aren't they restless like me in the presence of so much spirit spilling out into perfect notes? To focus on something, I looked out the window again, and I swear I saw 1 lone pine swaying among still companions.
Nice. That was not what I expected at the end.
Thank you. I always like that.
You have something else?
I have one. I'll do one more.
Do one more.
Okay. Burn. We can relate to this, the heat. I crack open a Negra Modelo, cool on a hot day, wisp my hair into a clip, catch you reaching in the tortilla chip bag, glimpse you in my door frame as you clank our dinner dishes, and pause, I burn you there. I don't care if it all goes up in flames, your eyes would look magnificent in the glow. At least I'll know what hot feels like. I never was allowed to touch the pot on the stove. Our love is as intricate as fire, each flame a hot finger that engulfs, then soothes what it touches. The coals of it, never what's left after burning, but rather a steady heat that warms us to the bone.
Jules, you never write about me like that.
There might be a reason, Bill.
There might be a reason. Oh, she has this love affair with this tall, good-looking guy named Dan or Don or something like that. We tease her because when they first started going together, she kept forgetting his name, of all things. Well, why don't we move on to our next reader
who's going to give us the proper version of her name.
Correct pronunciation of her name.
We won't make Bill say it again. I'm Sean Avaningo, and I live out in Rescue. I'm kind of new to the poetry scene. I've only been writing probably for about 3 years, although I used to kind of write in high school, but that stuff didn't count because it all rhymed.
Yeah, me too.
Now, Bill says that he handpicked the three of you for this program. So how did you know Sean?
Well, Sean, I've seen Sean read at several open mics around the area, mostly in Sacramento, and enjoyed her immensely. In fact, she was a person I got to tease quite a bit when I was on stage one night, giving her magnets and whatever.
I was his heckler.
a great heckler. You need one of these in every crowd.
Yes, you do.
And then not too long ago, her and I had the opportunity to read together at the Vox in Sacramento. And the joint was packed, and we had a ball, and it was just wonderful. I think there were two other people on the stage with us, and it was just great. So we couldn't let her go by and just stay in the doldrums down there in Sacramento country. We had to bring her up here at our earliest opportunity. So that's how she managed to get on the bill for this August 8th reading.
Now, didn't quite hear what you said before, whether it had been 3 years that you've been writing as an adult or whether it was 3 years you've been associated.
No, it's only been about 3 years that I've been writing.
Have you actually been writing?
I've only met Bill, maybe 6 months ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it hasn't been very long at all.
And what caused you to start up again without rhymes?
I'm about to be an empty nester, and so now I have a lot of time on my hands where I can actually work on my poetry. I think just going through different phases in my life, writing was kind of a form of therapy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just opened the floodgates.
Julie is nodding.
What they say, poetry is cheaper than therapy,
Bill and Marilyn,
right?
Are not. So do you have something you'd like to read?
Yeah,
we have actually a fair amount of time. So
okay, I've got a couple pieces that I could read. This first one is called Corsets, and I'm going to read this by request by Julie and I guess Todd Cirillo, who is listening on the air. We know one person's listening right now. Here we go. Corsets. Young girl. Silhouette, an hourglass. No need for a corset. Her nipples rose for any occasion. No boning required, not really even a need for underwire. So why waste time? His fingers would clumsily navigate hooks and eyelets in the back seat when all she wanted, all they both wanted, was to wear his hands like a belt. The interlacing of his fingers with hers, so much more satisfying than the to and fro of synthetic satin strings. But youth is only a memory in the rearview mirror, and it's not actually closer than it appears. So to capture his fancy, she must shift the sand. The story, not a new one. So familiar are the scenes from period films, the ones where the mistress would grasp the bedpost, a phallic symbol indeed. Her dressing maiden with foot planted on spine, tightening the reins, and her pondering having one less rib to fracture. Last week, I took my daughter shopping for prom dresses, wondering if they realized I, too, used to look dazzling in strapless gowns and rhinestones. There was a corset in the windows at Frederick's, black and white polka dot with just a hint of red. Perhaps I'll purchase it with my next paycheck, hoping my hourglass hasn't run out of time.
Not bad.
Thanks.
What else do you have?
I have one that's a little more serious. I wrote about my best friend who had a really tough battle with ovarian cancer. It's called Remission. Remission, you're such a tease. You dangled that carrot of hope before my best friend's nose, and we believed. We believed she had beaten the odds. We believed she had broken the seal of her fate to walk in the footsteps of aunts before her. Remission, we believed in you. You were supposed to be a stepping stone to survival, not a stone-cold lover who spat in her face. Remission, we set the table for your arrival, obeying every rule of Miss Post. Forks to the left of a plate full of chemo, a goblet of radiation next to the water glass, a solemn prayer spoken in hopes this repast, not her last. Remission, we welcomed you with open arms into our house, into our heart. You taught us to play chess, recognize the power of the pawn, the folly of starry-eyed knights to care for a queen. And then you made your move. Checkmate. Remission, you are quite the player.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, a little sad there, but nice upbeat at the end. Nice upbeat at the end.
I'm just going to let people know that this is Booktown on KVMR-FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Toman. I'm with Bill Gaynor. What you just heard was Sean Avaningo. We all earlier heard Julie Valen, rather. And then Marilyn Souza is coming up. They are going to be part of the Nevada County Poetry Series Rent Party this coming Saturday, the 8th, at 7:30 p.m. on the main stage of the Center for the Arts.
The main stage at the Center for the Arts.
Yeah, now, you usually have the monthly readings either on the off-center stage or next door.
Yeah, we do. Typically, we do one show a year in the main stage in the big theater, unless they, for some reason, they shift us over there, but typically we do during the week as well, and that kind of turned out to be an odd occurrence here. We changed from Fridays because they used to have the farmer's market on Fridays, and you couldn't get any parking. So we went to Thursdays thinking, okay, it'd be more easy for the people. And then the year after we changed to Thursdays, Grass Valley's farmer market changed to Thursday too. So we didn't really achieve our basic goal there, but it still works, so come on over. There's plenty of parking in downtown. We have the two parking lots behind the center that are always, there's always space there, as well as the streets around town there.
Bring your cowbells.
Bring your cowbells for whatever, just for the memory's sake. But anyway, our third player in this game, the rent party, is another young woman here from the county. She's been here, I don't know, about a year or so now. She's originally out of Nevada, but
it says Truckee on the
flyer. Las Vegas.
Well,
I know, it doesn't.
But she's kind of raised in Nevada, and so I think she's kind of coming home here, let's say. And we appreciate it. And how I met her, I've been trying to think about that. I think I originally met her at a Nevada County Poetry Series reading, and Todd Cirillo took some time to introduce us. And then I started seeing her down in Sacramento, going down there with her cousin. I can't remember her name.
Little Courtney. Little Courtney.
And you guys were down at Luna's often, reading in the open mics down there. So we had asked her to read in October this year with another young fellow, Matt Amott, who is part of the 6 Foot Swells. But Matt's off on the road, and we don't know when he's going to be back. So we asked Marilyn if we could change her date to this show and have the three women together, which is always an exciting event because these things tend to boil up the heat and make for a nice evening that can often turn quite a fun event, as well as brings the dough downtown, you know, take them out, have some food, a few drinks. Anyway, Marilyn, what do you have for us? Maybe you can share something.
Okay. I have a
why don't you talk a bit about yourself?
Yeah,
before
about
you.
Just, we forgot that part, for Christ's sake.
Well, I just moved out here from Las Vegas last November and been writing poetry since I was pretty young and been doing open mics for about 5 years now and really enjoy it in this area. It's definitely good for the soul.
Now, at the beginning of the program, you handed me your book, Finding the Ultimate Treasure, and said you were getting kind of tired of it. You wanted to get rid of it and start on a new one. So are you going to...
Yeah, anything I make off the book for the reading, I'm going to donate to the cause, to the fundraiser, so whatever you think it's worth. And the first one I'm going to read is from the book, Finding the Ultimate Treasure.
Cool.
It doesn't have a title. He'll never know that I'm the reason men write poetry and that he's the reason I write mine. He'll never know that these words aren't forced, that they had a fluidity from my fingertips that I still to this day do not know of. They just came. But they still bear their meaning and they still feel just as radiant even with this layer of dirt pressing neatly upon their tops. I long for the battles of engagement and boxing matches against friends who aren't friends at all. I long to see the blood on their chins and to raise up my gloves as champion of all their words spewed from mouths who couldn't hold up to their owner's weaknesses. Sometimes the shoe doesn't fit, but it still looks pretty on your foot. Like lavender skies pressing down on the mountaintops that hold me in this valley, keeping me confined like the caged bird that wants to sing but can't find the right key to sing its tune, I'll play mute for you. Like midnight masses on desert highways, ale in hand, leaving religion and care behind in the city. To keep warm was the goal, to smile and to feel the cold chatter of slick wet teeth. Just to enjoy the company of a new friend whom you feel more at home with than old acquaintances, long forgotten and not quite forgiven. Buttering someone else's bread because they can't get the spread just right and they just can't seem to hold the knife.
Do you have another short piece?
I wrote a poem about just about every guy I meet.
Oh. So sounds familiar. You have books.
Yeah.
You must have books. Yeah.
So this is for Derek. With him, I talked of sickles. With you, I want the pitchfork. Aerate me like that clay-colored soil under those green trees that remind me of your underbrush eyes. Eyes that I desperately want on me. Kiss me under those stars. Stars like rays. Stars like the million promises we were both kept. I'm sorry, we were both promised. I'll keep them for you in the sky as a reminder of what I can hold on to for you. Of you. You are a man and I am a sorry excuse for a keeper of your stars. Let me keep them anyway. Stride with me. You, I, it will grow, and we shall toast triumphantly the fruit of our labor, and I'll just bet it will taste sweeter under promised stars.
There you go. Nice. Well, what do you think, Eric? We heard love, loss, and longing, cancer, and nipples, and all kinds of stuff here.
Just come on down to the reading.
I think they're holding back a little bit because it is radio as well.
Oh yeah. Yes, we sure are. You so, know yeah. it.
No, I, there are a few. I haven't seen Julie or Sean's books, but there are a few pages in Maryland's that couldn't be read on the air.
My grandma's listening.
Yeah, grandma's listening. In fact, that's the other thing I forgot to mention. Marilyn has a large support family here in the community. Her uncle and her grandma and her grandpa. And in fact, aren't you helping take care of grandpa right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, we'd love everybody to be out there. August, Saturday, 8/2/09, 7:30 p.m. in the big stage at the Center for the Arts. And we have. Why don't you guys say goodbye?
Well, we've actually got a whole minute and a half to go.
Well, who wants to read another poem?
Sean
has a lighthearted one. Yay!
Sean, a fun one. Something. I can't leave you thinking about cancer.
No.
Driving Miss Daisy May. She sauntered in, wearing polka dots, invisible to most. Yet he knew, bending just so he caught a glimpse, those spheres that mimic her curves, nipples chilly with excitement, anticipation, goosebumps now traversing his spine. He longed to play connect the dots, sketching out the lover of his dreams on a dog patch afternoon. She loves him. She loves him not. She, oh yes, she knows how to love him. Abner, little no more.
Okay, this has been Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Toman. I've been in the last half hour, Bill Gaynor, who's the head honcho of the Nevada County Poetry Series.
One of them.
Well, I think of the. Also, Julie Valin, Sean Avaningo, and Marilyn Souza. They're going to be reading for the At the Rent Party, the Poetry Series fundraiser, this coming Saturday at 7:30 p.m.
At the Center for the Arts.
At the Center for the Arts, which is very important. And now it's time.
Thank
we
you,
just
Matt.
Have to get out of here and make way for
Thank
Jimmy
you.
Cardi and his rock and roll party. Doesn't look like Jimmy. Looks like John Rumsey. So we are in for some sort of 50s treat, I would guess.